First Sunday marks both Father's Day and Juneteenth, now a federal holiday that commemorates the freeing of enslaved African Americans and celebrates Black culture and community. So it was a great time for our next guest to release a new book about her own 96-year-old father, a Black man born and raised in rural Louisiana in the Jim Crow era. We'll find out how he lived, as our guest writes, often oppressed, never defeated, and share some of the wisdom and lessons he passed down to her. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you collected the story of your dad or your grandfather? What lessons have you learned from them? Is there something you'd like to share with us? If you're a dad yourself, what are you trying to pass on to your own kids? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Nita Whitaker is an award-winning actress and singer, as well as a former intensive care unit nurse and former Miss Louisiana. Her latest book is called When Your Hand is in the Lion's Mouth, The Life and Wisdom of a Man Named Green. Nita, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. I'm excited to be here with you.
I've heard a couple times lately on the show that a very common regret people have is that they didn't collect, they didn't hear the stories of their parents and grandparents. What is it that led you to start off on this project and collect your dad's story?
Well, my dad is an innate teacher. Even when he's not doing anything in particular, there's always some way, by example or just something he says, that you catch something. And he would say these phrases that I would catch over the years. So I said, Dad, I wanna get some of these stories down, because he is the last living of his entire family. There were 19 children. And he is the second to the youngest, but his eldest brother passed away in 2020. So he is the last living one. And I knew that I wanted to save these stories because I've repeated them. I've repeated some of these lessons to my friends and family when something comes up. And I say, you know, my dad says. So I thought it would be prudent of me to collect them and have them here for him as an homage, and paying homage to not a perfect man, but a great man, a great dad, so that my children and my grandchildren and people can get to know some of this sage homespun wisdom of a great father.
I feel honored to have met Green Whitaker through your book. But one thing I wondered reading the book is, what did he say when you told him you wanted to write a book about him?
He is so easy. He's one of those, still has this childlike innocence. He said, "Oh boy." He said, "That'll be great." I said, "Okay, Daddy, I'm going to do it." It was a process to do it, because in the process of writing, as you know, you're living. There are things that I was juggling around, trying to write a chapter and, you know, remodeling a kitchen or going to work for 2 months across the country. And but I just kept going. And I knew that I would get here. And I think it arrived at the right time, because I was pushing myself for some other dates. But I think everything happens in a divine time. And I think this is the perfect time for it to come out. He is still so cognitively together. And he's able-bodied. He's able to take care of himself. And it's just a blessing to have him and to still be able to pick up the phone and call him and say, "Hey, Dad, what do you think about?" Or, "Hey, Dad, tell me that story about..." And he just recalls it. He's just all right there. It's such a gift. He is such a gift.
One of the things you interviewed him about was his life as a teenager. Now we're in rural Louisiana. He's picking cotton for uncertain amounts of money. Can you share some of what you learned about that era and his life in it?
Well, they were a very large family, so they were a big force in the Holly community where he grew up. And at 10, when they were forced to move and sell their home and their oil came in on their property, they moved to a sharecropping farm owned by the Frierson family. It's still in existence and still they still produce cotton crop today. But he learned a lot. They were all in there doing together. Most of the people in their community did this kind of work. It was the work you did. It was what was in front of you, so you did it. Before they became sharecroppers, they were completely self-sufficient and independent, had their own cotton, their own fruit, vegetables that they took care of themselves. And then they became sort of dependent on this system that they were forced into. But I think that the lesson that he took away from all of that was a great work ethic. And my grandfather, who I never met, but my father speaks of him with such love and adoration, as I speak about my dad, he said people would say to their dad, Isaac Whitaker, why do you make those boys work so hard? And he said, it's because they have to know how to work on any job. I'm not going to be around always, but I want them to know how to do whatever is put in front of them. So he made sure they were they were completing tasks, they were doing everything to the best of their ability, that they were proud of the work, even the cotton picking that they were doing. So sometimes there was never information given about what the seed cost. So the landowner could discriminately or indiscriminately just pick a number to give you. One year, I think you, if you may have read it, he and his brother had worked about, had baled about 12, had harvested about 12 to 13 bales of cotton, which should have been about $1,000. But because they weren't given any information about what the seed cost, and the guy goes into the farmer and, well, you know, I had to pay for this, I had to pay for that. But if the numbers changed, they were never given the information. So they were totally reliant on whatever that person said it was. That when their dad was alive, he could do math in his head and he would always correct them. And they knew that about Isaac Whitaker. But not having the information, my dad and his brother could have figured it out. They just weren't given the information. So they were given subservient wages as well. So when he finally, the last time he picked cotton, I think he was 21, he was at a different farm of a gentleman who they had heard was very fair. And he got this first check for $1,200 for the same amount of land, the 10 acres or so. And he was like, wow. But he was done. That was the last time he said he moved on to other work and he never looked back.
We're talking to Nita Whitaker about her new book, When Your Hand is in the Lion's Mouth, The Life and Wisdom of a Man Named Green, a memoir of her father. You could join in if you've collected a story like this in your own family at 800-642-1234, or maybe a lesson you learned from your dad getting ready for a Father's Day. Now, I mentioned that phrase you wrote about your dad, often oppressed, never defeated in his life. And this seems like this is one of the biggest lessons that you take and share from your dad, Green. Can you talk about that?
Well, he was born into the Jim Crow era. He was born in 1926, and America was about to plunge into the Great Depression. There was, you know, bigoted and targeted racial violence. There was lynching. There was all of these things. But for a little while, they were cocooned in this beautiful bubble, rural bubble in Holly, Louisiana. And even though the world around them, and even when they moved down to pick cotton on the Friarswood plantation, they learned how to exist in a system that was meant to keep them oppressed. But there was a resilience within the family unit, resilience within that beautiful big family, that they had each other, they had their faith, and they never felt like they were less than. They were respected people in the community. They did good work. They were honorable people. And that good name carried them further. My father came out of that cotton field and he's traveled all over the world. He was the number one insurance agent in Louisiana for about 25 years in his region. He just wanted more. He wanted his part of the American dream, and he believed it came through work. And that work got him to the place where he was able to co-create a beautiful family and a home life that was that filled his heart, and it surely blessed all of his children.
Now, you lost your mom too early, and I was sorry to read that. Can you talk about how Green, your dad, took that dual role on?
Well, my dad is exceptional in so many ways, and having to take up that mantle of dad and then try to fill in some of the spaces that mom left was quite daunting. He just knew that it was his job to keep the family a family. And so he did. He was present for everything. He showed up. He made sure we had our family gatherings, Christmas, and all the things that we did together. He just was available. And he was there for all of us. He let us continue to grow. He, I'm sure, had his own way of grieving. We'd grieve together and separately, but he was able to keep us a united front. And we have always been close, but we just became closer after we lost Mommy. And I'm so grateful for a father like that who didn't fall apart, because he knew he still was the shepherd of this flock. And he kept us going. And I love him forever for that.
We're talking to singer, actress, and author Nita Whitaker about her new memoir of her father. It's called When Your Hand is in the Lion's Mouth, The Life and Wisdom of a Man Named Green. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with singer, actress, and author Nita Whitaker. We're talking about her father and life lessons she learned from him just ahead of Father's Day and Juneteenth, which both fall on Sunday this weekend. Nita's new book, also out this weekend, is a memoir about her father called When Your Hand is in the Lion's Mouth, The Life and Wisdom of a Man Named Green. Nita, we talked just a few moments ago about how your dad really helped you get through tough times. He was also there for you and your biggest fan as you started to develop this career in music and acting. Can you talk about your dad as your fan?
Well, he just, everything that I did, my dad showed up for. If I had two lines in a play, he was right there. And then when I moved to California and I was trying to start in this big wide world of show business outside of the comfort zone of Louisiana, he was just the person that I call, because he knows people. He understands human behavior. So he was able to, I said, Daddy, this, I would call him about situations, and he would just have just the right sage advice to give me to kind of help me understand a situation that I may have found myself in, or to calm me down. So he was with me all the way. So when I got the Star Search, and it took me a few tries to get there, I met Sam Harris, who you may remember from Star Search. I did a play with him, a musical, and he got me my fifth audition, which is when I finally got on the show. Thank you, Sam. And my dad was in the audience when I was singing for the final, and the song that I chose was Piece of Sky from Yentl, a Barbara Streisand song from her movie Yentl. And the last line of it is, Papa, watch me fly. And the whole song, for me, I sang to him. Because everything in my life that I've been able to accomplish, I really know and believe is because of having a great foundation of a profound fatherly love. We need our moms, too. That's not to negate anything that our beautiful mothers give us, but because we are in the season of celebrating fathers, and this certainly is, for me, a celebration and homage to my father, who is not a perfect man, but he's a really good man. He's a beautiful being who, like I say in the book, he embodies the best of us. He was just there every step of the way. When I didn't have a good performance, I'd call my dad, and he would, because he had been a singer, and he was like, well, honey, you know, he had some advice for that, which is in the book. I want you to read it. He just knew what to say to get me through to the other side of some challenge or whatever that I was going through. So he has been my steady counselor. And my incredible, just incredible resource.
You share a lot of the wisdom that he has given you over the years. Some of it you kind of organize into four foundations, including this one, love will always win. What did you learn from Green, from your dad, about the ways that love can win in the end?
He lived that. He always led with kindness and love. And he would say to us, girls, I want you to do everything in love and excellence, love and excellence. And I think that he felt if you approach things from the viewpoint of loving instead of the viewpoint of someone is after me, or just approach it with love, you can turn that situation around. I saw him do it time and time again when there was tempers flaring, and my father would come in with just a calm word and a loving word that would just diffuse the situation. There was so many times when I've seen him in action doing this, and that's the thing that's really great about my dad, is that he was the example. He just didn't say it; he lived it. He modeled it. He showed it, and it wasn't something he was doing like, I'm going to show you how to do this. It was innate for him, and he led with love. When you meet him, and he's one of those kind people, you know right away who he is, because there's no layer It's just love. He meets you with love. So I witnessed that. I got to see my father as a living example of that. So of course that spilled over to us and became a part of our personalities and a part of how we approach life and people.
There was something, this is a running theme for a while in his life. There's something in his bearing, his demeanor, where people kept thinking he was a preacher of some sort. He wasn't, but people would look at him and read, oh, this guy's a preacher.
Oh, still to this day, I mean, people say, Mr. Green, are you were you called? There's a story where we were sitting in the restaurant and this lady, and this was the time where people were not eating together, black and white people were not eating together. And we were sitting and we always went for dinner on Sundays because my dad said to my mom, you're not cooking today. So that would be a big treat for the whole family. And this lady walks over to my dad and he's like, oh gosh, what did I do? What did I say? And she walks over and she puts her hand on his shoulder. And she said, I've traveled from Florida to here and I don't see a lot of people like you. Have you been called? And he said, I haven't heard anything. But so many times during his life, he has a carriage that's very like a Southern statesman. And he always has this graciousness about him. And he is a man of great faith. So I think all those things combined, sometimes it has given him, it's gotten him out of a couple scrapes, which is a good thing. But I think there was something in him that people could see that was faith-filled. And the question would always come. But I think it's a good thing.
Talking to Nita Whitaker, singer, actress, author of the new book, When Your Hand is in the Lion's Mouth, The Life and Wisdom of a Man Named Green. Nita, you're a parent yourself. What kind of specific things did you try to, you know, model yourself on from your dad?
Well, there were two in particular. One of them that my dad modeled for me was finding a way. My brother was born with special needs. He had a physical handicap, and my mom and dad had to leave him in New Orleans at Shriners Hospital for a special surgery. And they traveled for 6 months every weekend, 6 hours one way, 6 hours back, to visit with him every single weekend. They wanted to give him the best opportunity to have the best start to his life that they could, even if it meant being separated from him for a time. They mainstreamed him. They did all the things that were not normally done when my brother was small. They just said, no, he's going to be right here with us. He's going to do everything that we do. They found a way. So I use that word, that mantra, find a way, when I'm trying to figure out my way through a situation, or find a way to make it work, find a way to get through it. And the other one that I love is go all the way. Dad was shaving, which is my dad still shaves every morning. It's part of his morning ritual. And this particular morning when I was in college, my mother had passed, and I was sitting on the countertop in between the two sinks, and he was shaving, and he was just chatted like we normally did. And he just looked up and said, I'm going to need you to go all the way. And that statement, he did, when I saw him living that, when I was not considering going for Miss Louisiana for the fourth time, because I thought it wasn't going to happen. I thought they weren't going to allow me to win. My dad said, go all the way. I remembered him in that cotton field having to pick cotton in that Louisiana humid heat and doing it day after day. And I thought, how can I not go all the way? How can I not give it my best? You know, how can I not give everything that I do 150%? Because my dad did that. So that means I can do it because it's in me too. So those two things have informed everything in my life.
Nita, I think probably all of us have someone, maybe it's a parent or grandparent or an elder in our community that we wish we knew more about, even if we're not going to end up writing a book about it. Can you give us some encouragement on how to get started with something like that?
Well, I think just, you know, we have iPhones. We have places that we can record their voices, because you want to have their voices. Like I said, my dad is the last living of his family of 19. And when it is his time, I wanted to be sure that I had not just this book, but his voice, because that portal will be closed to those stories. My great-grandmother lived to be 104, my maternal great-grandmother. Wow. And I was too young to have the presence of mind to ask her questions about her life, that she could thread a needle at 100 years old. I didn't have the presence of mind because I was young and I wished I'd taken down more of her stories. I do have some of my mom's siblings that are still alive and they can give me more information, but my dad is the last portal into his family's experience. So I really wanted to, I want to encourage people to write them down. If it's just for the family, record them on your cell phones and get those stories before you aren't able to get them anymore.
In just our last few moments, you were obviously really close to your dad before you started this book. Do you feel like in some ways you you discovered new things that, that brought you closer together?
I guess so. We've always been very close. He and I have a special bond. We're the singers of the family, even though everybody sings, but he and I probably did it more publicly and me more so than dad. But we've just always had a special bond. And I think I've grown to appreciate his journey even more because I've chronicled it a little bit in the book, not every aspect of it, but some moments of it and how his life informed my life and how I was able to reach back and get some knowledge from him and give it to my children and have him give some up to my children. I do think it just made me appreciate and adore him even more.
It's a great place to leave it. Nita, thanks so much for sharing Green's story with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Nita Whitaker is a singer, actress, and author. We talked to her about his latest book out this weekend, a memoir about her dad. It's called When Your Hand is in the Lion's Mouth, The Life and Wisdom of a Man Named Green.